Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 3rd chapter, text number 16. Yam vai na gobhir manasasubhir va hrida gira vasu brito vichaksate atmanam Antar Priti Santam Atmanam Chakshur Yatai Vakritayas Tata Param Yambaina Gobir Manas Manasasubirva Rida gira vasu brito vichaksate Atmanam antaridi santam atmanam Chakshuryatai vakritayas tata param Yambai nagobir manasa subirva Rida gira vasu brito vichaksate Atmanam antar hridi santam atmanam Chakshuryatai vakritayas tata param Yambaina gobir manasa subirva Rida gira vasu brito vichaksate Atmanam antiridi santam atmanam Chakshuryatai vakritayas tata param Maharajis.
Maharajis.
Yam Hum Vai indeed Na not Gobi by the senses Manasa by the mind Asubi by the life breath Ba or Rida by thoughts Gira by words Va or Asubritaha the living entities Vichakshate see or know Atmanam the supersoul Antarhriti within the core of the heart Santam existing Atmanam of the living entities Chaksu the eyes Yata just like Eva indeed Akritaya the different parts or limbs of the body Tata than them Param higher Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated as the Supersoul in everyone's heart, not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibrations of words, can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. Please repeat. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated as the Supersoul in everyone's heart, not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words, can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. Purport. Although the different parts of the body do not have the power to see the eyes, the eyes direct the movements of the body's different parts. The legs move forward because the eyes see what is in front of them. And the hand touches because the eyes see touchable entities. Similarly, every living being acts according to the direction of the Supersoul, who is situated within the heart. As the Lord Himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarva shaha cham ridi sannivisto matir smritir gyanam apavanam cha. I am sitting in everyone's heart and giving directions for remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Ishvara sarva bhutanam ridi desi arjuna tishtati, 1861. The Supreme Lord, as the Supersoul, is situated within the heart. The living entity cannot do anything without the sanction of the Supersoul. The Supersoul is acting at every moment, but the living entity cannot understand the form and activities of the Supersoul by manipulating his senses. The example of the eyes and the bodily limbs is very appropriate. If the limbs could see, they could walk forward without the help of the eyes. But that is impossible. Although one cannot see the Supersoul in one's heart through sensual activities, his direction is necessary. Om Gyana Tamadandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagatamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Gosari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vancha Kopa Tubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha. Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namo. So the verse again. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated as the super soul in everyone's heart. Not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words, can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. So today, let's talk about what lies behind us and before us. Two items we'll just discuss today. Sound and trees. It's an interesting topic. Sound and trees. Actually, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, this entire material world is like a banyan tree. So the tree is everything. And the sound is the source of everything. The source of everything was originally sound. So basically we're talking about everything here. And it's described in this verse, how can the different limbs of the body see the other parts of the body, like the arms? How could they see the eyes or the legs? How could they see? They can't see. So similarly, we are blind in this mature world, as this verse described. We can't see the Supreme Lord and how He's acting everywhere. But yet, in another place in the Bhagavatam, it's described how actually we can see the Supreme Lord with a little bit of help of the intelligence. You can actually perceive the Lord everywhere and see how we're different from all this cosmic gross manifestation in the form of a tree. And Prabhupada gives the simple formula that how you can see different things that are before you, and you can identify them as being separate from you. You can identify that is not you, but you're actually the perceiver. So there's a difference between the perceiver and what's perceived. And then Prabhupada goes on to describe how not only are you seeing something that's different than you, but actually all these objects that you see before you are provided for you. You have nothing to do with them. They're there, and you cannot even see or function or use your senses without them. And then Prabhupada further goes on to describe how, in fact, you can't even move. You can't do anything or be guided unless you had some director who is actually helping you go to particular places and go here and there. It's a sanctioner. The oversoul or the super soul, the overseer, is providing everything for you. Not only what you see and all the manifestations, but even the direction, the guidance, and the ability to go and do anything. So in this way, one can actually perceive like that. So this illusory energy is what binds the conditioned soul to this mature world. And this is what's called the knot of the material world. It creates a knot. The spirit spark comes in contact with this material elements, and it creates this knot of the material world. So it's spirit and matter mixed together. And you can see the knots in the trees. We were looking at the tree the other day, and there's a tree growing out of the ground, and it's like twisted. It's like growing twisted. You can see the different grains growing like that. And then you see in the tree there's different knots. So it's a very knotty tree. So just like we are very knotty trees in this material world, we have all these knots, and these must be cut. All these different knots are the material desires that we have to enjoy matter separately from Krishna. It's this false ego that obliges us to become identified with the matter. So we have to terminate this. We have to cut this somehow. We have to detach it. It's actually an invincible knot. I mean, can you imagine trying to like unknot a knot in a tree? It's practically impossible. What do? You just cut it. And what is that sword that you cut it with, that knife? It represents the, you know, the words coming from the spiritual master, the favorable winds of the scriptures. These are different ways we could cut it down. Just like you see a great wind comes and sometimes it'll knock a tree over. It's very powerful. So these are very powerful winds. They can knock us out of this material condition. Cut this knot. So we have to become detached from this tree. This tree is very nicely described in the 11th canto, how what's produced, you know, we've accepted this material body since time immemorial, and these bodies are like giant trees that sustain our existence in this material world. So, and then this body produces different results. And then the tree is described, it has two seeds, which are pious and impious activities. So we could do things either good or bad, and they bind us in different ways like that. And there's hundreds of roots in this tree. Have you ever seen these roots? It's like amazing. Some of these trees get knocked over, and sometimes the roots will come over, or you see people cut. There's just unlimited roots under there. And those represent the innumerable desires, material desires, that chain us to this material world. You know, how can you uproot a tree? It's so difficult. There's so many, just as many as you see the branches up in the sky, there's that many roots underneath. So it's very difficult to cut that out. So these are our material desires that bind us to this material world. And then it has, there's three lower trunks that represent the three modes of material nature. So this trunk is very powerful, and these modes of nature bind us here. And then there's five upper trunks. They represent the gross material elements. You know, and then the tree produces five flavors, which is sound, form, touch, taste, and aroma. And it has 11 branches, five working senses, the five knowledge-acquiring senses, and the mind. And then there's two birds in that tree. Anybody know what they are? One bird is... And the other bird? And the Atma, yes, the soul and the super soul. So the individual soul and the super soul are there. And they have their nest in this tree. And there's three types of bark. There's the air, bile, and mucus that constitute the elements of the body. And then the two fruits. Anybody know what the two fruits are of this tree? Yes, there's happiness and distress is the fruits that we experience here in the material world. So we have these functions of the working senses. We have these organs of speech, the hands, the legs, all these different functions. These knowledge-acquiring senses, the nose, the tongue, eyes, skin. All these subtle senses, the mind, intelligence, consciousness, false ego. These are all different subtle functions that interact with the three modes of material nature. But Krishna says, all these are my materially manifested form. So this is actually Krishna. Krishna is everywhere. He's the root of everything. He's the main tree. Just as by watering a tree, it distributes water everywhere throughout the branches and the leaves and everything. So Krishna is the source of everything, and every action or any action that's done for Krishna is to be considered the highest welfare activities. For everyone. It actually benefits everyone. It's distributed throughout his entire creation. So that's what we have to do is, some or another, water this root of the tree of Krishna, who is the source of everything in this material world. So we have to become detached from this material tree. Somehow or another, we have to cut our relationship somehow by not being attached to these material things. But there's two types of detachment or renunciation. There's one devotee, he's inimical to sense gratification. He hates it like Jada Bart. Very inimical. And there's a story we also read about, I'll tell a little story about Sudama Vipra. He was also inimical towards this sense gratification. But then there's another type of devotee, he's just indifferent to it. You know, their sense gratification is there, he could take it or leave it. He's not attached. He can use it for Krishna. Many examples of that, Prahlad Maharaj, you know, great saintly kings. They used everything for Krishna. But they were indifferent towards it. They didn't despise it or they didn't want inimical towards it. So we have this very poverty-stricken devotee, Sudama Vipra, and he was very detached from sense gratification. And one may wonder, why is he so poverty-stricken? Because he's a devotee of Krishna, and Krishna provides, right? Krishna provides what you lack. Like that, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita. So, but because of this, he was inimical towards sense gratification. Krishna won't force anything on his devotees. So he's in a poverty-stricken condition. And his wife was pleading for him to go to your friend Krishna, who provides everything. So out of duty, he went and he borrowed some rice from the neighbors because he's so poor they didn't even have some rice to give Krishna. So he grabbed some rice and put it in a cloth and brought it to Krishna. Krishna, he went and visited Krishna. And Krishna loves the Brahmins. He worships the Brahmins. He thinks the Brahmins, you know, he performs sacrifices for the Brahmins. He's like, he loves them. So he showed this love to Sudama Vipra. When he came there, he washed his feet, massaged his feet. They fanned him and offered him some food and some rest. And, you know, he felt like he was in the spiritual world. A very nice sleep there, you know. Of course he was. But, and then Krishna said, why did you, you know, you came here for something. I think you have something for me, don't you? And he was like too embarrassed to even present it to him because he thought it was unfit for Krishna. So Krishna says, oh, what do you got there? And he just grabbed, snapped it, and he started took a handful of this chipped rice from him. And then he was about to take another, and then Lakshmi, you know, Rukmini Devi stopped him and said, this is enough to provide him, you know, all the opulences of the world. And Krishna was so grateful. He's so grateful for the little offering like that, that he figured that he's offered me something, you know, from his own. He didn't even have it in his own home. He went through the trouble to go somewhere and get it. And he offered it to me. Therefore, I must give him something greater than all my opulences. But he said, there's nothing greater than what my opulences. So I guess he'll just have to be satisfied with all greater opulences than Lord Indra and all the demigods. He's going to give him all the opulences of the demigods. So Krishna was thinking like that. Look at Sudama Vipra. You could see his veins are exposed. And Krishna in his mind was saying, this is the last time he's going to have to be like this. I'm going to take care of my devotee. So Krishna took this and he was very grateful. And he was so embarrassed that he didn't want to ask Krishna for anything. You know, he was detached. He was renounced. So he left. And Krishna very gratefully walked him away and paid his obeisances. And Sudama Vipra was thinking that, yes, Krishna didn't really give me anything because I am so fallen. And Krishna, if he gave me some opulences, then he know I'll get puffed up and I'll become more attracted to these things than to him. So he was thinking like this on the way, and then he came to where his house was, and he saw this amazing effulgent light there, and he was wondering, what is this? And then he saw all these beautiful people there, all these great, you know, opulences, and he's like, whose is this? And then he was wondering, and then he saw it, and he realized it was his house, and he was like, how did this happen? So he was astonished in this way, and he saw that, you know, he saw his wife looked like a demigoddess. And there was many servants that looked like great personalities, beautiful forms, and the house was so nicely decorated with, you know, gem-studded pillars and ivory furniture, soft beds, parks, you know, birds, so many different things. He saw all this there, and he was just amazed. And his wife greeted him, and as soon as they greeted, then he transformed into a very beautiful person, and he was so grateful. But together, they always had the position, even though they got the greatest wealth from Krishna, together they realized that someday, you know, they were indifferent. I mean, they were like not so detached that someday they would give it up. But they used it in service of Krishna. But he became purified because they constantly chanted the holy names and always heard about Krishna. You know, they were always hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then what happened is the subtle knot in the Sudama Vipra's heart was cut. This knot was severed. And what was that knot? He was a little proud of his renunciation. He thought he was a little, you know, renounced. He was a little pride of that. But Krishna gave him everything. And by hearing and chanting Krishna with opulences, you know, he was able to cut that knot. So we can see, it's not that we're inimical to Krishna, because everything is Krishna. We have to see everything as Krishna's, and we could use it for Krishna. So this is the purpose of Krishna consciousness, is to see like that. So what about this sound as the source of everything? You see, Krishna is everywhere, and just like, you know, fire is everywhere, and we have to bring it out by rubbing. It's described, and sometimes the trees, the friction of the trees causes a fire, and it could burn down the tree also. So Krishna, even it's described how the tree is actually nothing but the sunshine, the fire in the wood. So we have to bring out this fire. And this is like describing the body as wood. And you rub this body with the transcendental sound vibrations, the holy names, you know, which starts, Om is the source of everything. So you rub, you know, with this. This is like the sacrifice of this age. Krishna says, of all the sacrifices that we perform, this is the rubbing, the austerities that we perform, is japa. This is the real austerity, is to do this japa. And if we rub these holy names with these tongues and this body that we have, this wooden body, then we can ignite this fire of Krishna, this fire of knowledge, which illuminates everything. And we begin to see things clearly. We begin to see Krishna everywhere. Krishna is manifested in all these things, and Krishna is within us. So this is very important. So the pure devotees, they're praying on the level of the heart, and they go deep within and they hear the holy names. There's a very nice seminar given by Bhaktivedanta Swami, and he talks about the four levels of sound vibration. And we know that we discuss a little bit about how everything comes from sound. The first manifestation, you know, within the heart, there's the desire. There's like a subtle sound. We can't hear all these four sounds. We can only hear the sound from speech, the gross speech. But there's subtler sounds. There's sounds on the level of the mind, you know, on the level of the soul. In fact, it's described how Krishna, he entered into the different chakras of Lord Brahma, into this subtle sound in the different chakras. And then from that, Lord Brahma, Krishna came out more and more gross into the sound, and Lord Brahma, through his sounds of the Vedic mantras and the different meters and different syllables, he created everything. So in the same way, we're like a little mini demigods like Lord Brahma, and we have this subtle sound within the heart, and we can create things with our desires. We saw all these desires, unlimited roots. We can take bind into this, but also we can change those into spiritual desires, and we can create the spirit, you know, spirituality in the same way. So in this special class given by Bhaktivedanta Swami, he was talking about how we have to go in, you know, within, as we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're using our sound instead of just lip service. We have to actually have service on the subtle sound. It's like you're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But your mind is thinking of something different. You're thinking of sense gratification. So we have to be chanting even subtly. Like as you're chanting, more and more we become purified. That's why we have to constantly chant over and over and again. Keep rubbing the wood to create the flame. Because we have such perverted desires from time immemorial that they have to become purified. So you have to go within, and you know, we have to very, you know, as we're chanting Hare Krishna, you know, we can turn on the switch of liberation, or you could turn on the switch of bondage. What is that switch? It's that mood of renunciation. It's that mood of detachment. That my desires are just for Krishna. All I desire is Krishna. All we're interested in is Krishna. Like the gopis are the highest form. It's described that the gopis were so absorbed in Krishna, they even forgot their own bodies. And the gopis are considered to be the most beautiful forms in God's creation, women's forms. And yet they completely forgot their own physical bodies. They were so absorbed in Krishna. But yet, see, we're so absorbed in our own bodies that Krishna has created this mind. In the material world, you can't be satisfied here in the material world. So Krishna created a mind to where you can actually create an image of yourself to think that you're greater than God. Because the soul would never be satisfied here. So he's given us all these cheating facilities, these cheating items in the mature world. He's given us the mind. And then as we come into the mature world, we have these desires. It says that the human being in the mature world has four main desires. And one of them is that we feel incomplete, so we need somebody to be with, right? So we want a companion like that. And if we can't find a companion, then what do we have? Krishna says he's given us speech. Because, you know, you have a companion, you talk about each other and you praise each other, right? You got to hear about your glories and like that. But if you don't have a companion, then you have your own voice. You can talk about yourself. Glorify yourself. I'm so great. Like that. So, and then he gives us another desire of the living being is that he wants to feel that he is his wealth. He wants to have wealth, right? So what is this wealth? You know, he gives us the organ of sight so you can see and you can actually become envious of things and you could lust after things. So the sight, you begin to see. And then we always want to have like some protection for the future, thinking that things are going to be working out, some insurance of our safety. So he's given us the ears so that we can hear. We hear from so many politicians, oh, in the future we're going to do this, and I'll promise this, and we'll give you that. So we hear about the future. It's going to be good like that. So we have this hearing propensity. So these are all cheating items given us to think that we're happy in this mature world. But no, we have to actually go in. We have to completely go within and pray to Krishna on the level of the heart and hear the holy name there and just desire Krishna. And then we'll be completely absorbed in just him and forget about this material tree. So as Emerson said, it's what lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny compared to what lies within us. So it's about time, I think. We've got about a minute. Is there any comments or realizations? Yes. Amala Bhakta Prabhu.
Thank you very much for a wonderful class.
sorry.
The last comment that you made, in which you mentioned that we should hear the holy name within the heart. Did I hear you correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or their desires. What I'm trying to say is that.
No, I just want to know
chanting,
if I heard.
But we're instead of when you're chanting, where is your mind? You should be also focused on Krishna. You see, you're chanting Hare Krishna with your voice, like lip service, but where are your thoughts? were your desires? Where's, because those are subtle sounds. So the subtle sound has to also be focused on Krishna.
But did you not mention that it should be heard in the heart?
Well, you can hear it in your own. Like, I can't hear your thoughts.
Now, this is a yes or no question.
Well, yeah, you can hear your own. You can hear your own thoughts.
Yeah, see, why I'm asking this question is that from what it sounded like is that, and I've heard this in other groups, that we should try to hear the sound of the holy name in the heart, as opposed to hearing it with our ears and sound. So this is not, to my understanding, what Srila Prabhupada taught us. What Srila Prabhupada taught us is that we should actually hear the sound coming out of our mouth, whether it's in a whisper, and ideally in an actual vocal sound, because it is that sound itself which is so purifying and which actually causes the transformation in the heart. There are groups that talk about not doing that, but talk about listening to the sound of the holy name in the heart. Mm-hmm. And to my understanding, unless someone else has read something else in Srila Prabhupada's books, that's the way we're supposed to do it, and not in the meditative fashion where you actually are hearing it in your mind only, but not in the vocal aspect.
I'm talking about doing both.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's
I'm not saying eliminate one or the other. Both is required. Both are important.
And when one is, of course, doing it vocally, as you so nicely said, one should not be thinking about other things. That's true.
Right.
Otherwise, but that all simply requires the concentrating on the sound itself.
Exactly.
And then one will not think.
Right.
And actually, the meaning of the sound combined with the actual sound brings the transcendental bliss.
Yeah, that's that austerity, is that you're constantly hearing the rubbing. This, you know, you're rubbing, you're chanting the holy names. And by that sound vibration, we become more and more purified. And association with devotees is very powerful, too. That's one of the things that the Sudama Vipra was very appreciative, that he prayed to Krishna, that he was so compassionate that life after life he may serve him and love him with friendship and sympathy, and that he cultivates such firm attachment for him by the precious association of his devotees. So that association is so powerful too. It's very precious. But thank you for that. That's important understanding. Any other comments or realizations? Okay, well, thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh, yeah, I should get my camera. Isn't it good? Yeah.